Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we just got to help you understand, folks, that that debt is fraud. We also need to help you understand that we need to use every tool, everything available to us to prosecute this, I'll just say, this war or our efforts in taking back our government. Clearly, we're being killed. Clearly, we're being attacked by our own government. Now, one of the things I'm going to dive into is paradigms and understanding and placing context to this attack. And what we have and what we need to do. And I want to actually place context to this regarding our own history. But before I do, the tools that I'm referring to is prayer. We need to invoke the power of prayer. We need to use, folks, I even will tell you that you need to fast. And not only fast, but whatever you do without, whatever you sacrifice, to sanctify that sacrifice, you have to actualize that. So in other words, it's nice to do without eating because there's some health benefits to that. But technically, the true sacrifice comes when you actually take the amount of money that you saved by not having that meal and giving that, you know, into the stores like Malachi. We talked about that earlier, I think, this past week. So we need to start doing things, and we need to start acting, and we need to actually start holding the line, and we need to be all in on this. So we're here trying to help you. We're trying to give you the education. We're trying to give you the content and context. We're doing everything we can. And you hear me say every day, we're reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. This cannot be done without you. As long as you get back and forth to work, I guess everything's okay until all of a sudden everything changes. Now, a long time ago, over 20 years ago, there was a point in time where everything changed. At least it changed for a moment of time. Your ability to drive home, your ability to get anywhere and do anything actually stopped. Everything suspended. There was no flights in or out or anywhere because of 9/11. This was a complete lockdown of America. Do you think that when they actually decide to do something, that it will just happen and we'll still, you know, life will just go on? That's not going to happen, folks. We're fooling ourselves to think that they won't, when they have to apply drastic measures, they won't actually apply drastic measures. They will. We're a fool to think otherwise. So we need to start placing context. But today, what we're going to do for today's show is I'm going to interview Matt Hawkins. He is running, he's running for state auditor for the state of Washington. And so we've had Matt on before. He actually was on in 2018 when he was running for the U.S. Senate. And there were a whole bunch of people in there. And one of the persons that was running was the former chair of the Washington State Republicans. And so that chair basically used their service as the chair to basically bolster themselves to hopefully win that race. Nice person, whatever, but they didn't create a movement. So we're going to have a pretty insightful conversation with Matt. But what I really want to do right now, because after we go through this interview, I'll basically just have a few seconds left to try to wrap up, and then the show's over. So we won't have a promo today. It's just going to be conversation with Matt. So once I have this conversation, like I said, I'll do a quick wrap, and then we'll kind of tell you what's coming up on Monday. So we need to start looking at our history, because a lot of people are using the rhetoric of Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was basically a call to arms. Thomas Paine was basically saying we need to take the drastic measures. Technically, at that point in time, and even today, we're a civil society. We have methods and processes that we can use and engage to absolutely engage and interpose with our government. We need to use those methods, not deadly force and revolution. And so when we see these types of things, we actually have to start thinking about what are the options. So the latest article that I'm writing on talks about what those options are. We talk about whether the party is the process. The current party as it exists, is it the process of invoking the change we need? No, it is incapable of doing that. We're going to be talking to Matt about that. We're also going to be talking to Matt about the courts, how the courts are not the process of taking back our government. They are the part of the problem. The same with the party. The way the parties are configured today, they're a part of the problem. So what is the other way? Oh, well, shoot, we can call for a convention and rewrite the Constitution. No, that doesn't do it. We've already covered, and I tell you all the time, that the only reason for a convention is literally when we actually, the purpose of that convention was to create amendments, not the rewriting of the Constitution. And the reality is that when that convention convenes, it has the ability to rewrite, and it has the ability to change. And even though there are hard fixes, or I should say hard thresholds within the Article 5 process, it doesn't mean that things that they're not going to try to pull shenanigans. Bottom line, the Constitution is not the problem. It is not our problem. It is what government is doing that is our problem. And so this is why we kind of cover all of these different processes of what we need to do. So as we kind of move forward, we're going to go into this conversation with Matt Hawkins. And so this is a difficult transition from going from me talking and into this interview. But the intent is to try to give you some background and history of what, why, and how it how long it takes for some people to finally get and understand the importance of creating a movement and using petitions as the process of moving forward. All right, folks, I actually have Matt Hawkins. And he is running for the state auditor for the state of Washington in the 2024 election. And so welcome, Matt, to Reclaiming the Republic, the show. Actually, you've been on the show before.
I have.
And it's been, 6 years.
It's great to be back.
Yes. Well, it's good to have you back. So let's actually, because I want to cover it a couple of times. How can people contribute to your campaign? You have a website and so forth. Go ahead. Let's cover that now.
There's a donation button on at mchawkins.org. That's mchawkins.org.
Simple enough. And so
we use Anadot. So Anadot is the proprietary mechanism which we use for the donations.
Okay. So what got you into the race?
Lack of transparency. And finally getting fed up with the fact that we're not getting answers, we're getting pushed around, and they keep changing the laws on us as we move down this pathway of trying to find some level of transparent behavior.
Well, yeah, but so let's get dive a little bit further deeper into this.
Okay.
What got you, so how did you get to this point where you're now involved in this race? Because as far as I see this, you were one of the first involved in the voter fraud, election fraud of the 2020 presidential election and the general election in the state of Washington.
Correct. In fact, people in the news as well as in the party politics kept calling me out and said, you know, you're a denier. And I said, I'm not a denier. I want to be able to know what the truth is. I want to be able to verify it. So in my mind, it was real simple. In the mind of everybody else, it was really simple. We hear things, we see things. We were told that the machines aren't connected to the internet. We were told by the Secretary of State that they're not connected to the internet. And we were told that there's not connectability. And so you kind of want to believe a little bit, but you're trying to verify.
Right, right.
And the first source that we got that said there is connectability was the AG out of Oregon, of all places. And the AG out of Oregon filed a report that said that the election systems, which were identical to our systems, were connectable to the internet. So with that being the case, then we rolled forward and we were trying to ask for an audit of our county only. So we wanted a third-party audit of our county election system. It took 6 months to get our county commissioners to talk about it. By the time we were going into a meeting with them, they just got notified by the Secretary of State that they were creating a brand new WAC, which in our state is a law that says that there will be no allowance for a third-party audit of the election system.
Interesting.
I thought, well, what gives? You know, here we are. We're citizens. We're trying to, you know, have some transparency. We're trying to believe what we're being told. And now they created a brand new WAC that says you absolutely, under no condition, can do a third-party audit of the election system. We're not trying to deny anything. We're just trying to verify.
In other words, they did something, and they realized they didn't have any protection to catch them from being caught in what they did. So then they had to create a law so that they could be protected from what they did.
Well, probably the worst part on it is that they forced us down this pathway to dig a little deeper. And so as we dug a little deeper, and we read through all of the RCWs as it relates to elections. And that's when we realized, well, just a second. The election record was written, a law was written in that said the election record must be reconciled after every election cycle. And we thought, okay, well, that's interesting. So the law... We didn't understand what that meant until we got into the next election, which was about 6 months later in 2022. Uh-huh. And we found out that in our state, which is a vote-by-mail state, in our county, we had about 130,000 ballots that were cast.
Right.
Well, about 5,000 ballots were printed by mail. And that one kind of caught us by surprise that why would you print your ballot at home only because the state's sending you your ballot? Well, at any rate, you can actually print your ballot at home. And so when we looked that up, we realized that there's 5,000 ballots printed at home that weren't being reconciled into the record. And so we went back in and asked the question, and they said, well, no, we only show 3 ballots. And we says, no, take a look at these numbers here. Well, finally they conceded and said there's something wrong with it. So the county tried to reconcile, and they changed their 3 number to about 170. That didn't work. They told us to go to the Secretary of State. The Secretary of State said about 800 or 900. Well, the odd part on it was that the county auditor won her race in that election by 1,100 votes. And we said, well, that doesn't add up because we still have about 3,500 ballots that were printed at home that aren't being reconciled.
Right.
So and he said, well, that's all we're going to do. So we go to the state auditor, and the state auditor won't even talk to us.
Right. So let me inject this.
Go.
You're only talking about around 5,000 for the county, correct, not for the state.
They're just the county.
And
just
so did you get any view or any insights on what those printed out ballots for the statewide was?
No, because they won't let us look at them.
Okay.
In our state, they won't even let you look at the cast vote records, which is a computer image of what the file has been transcribed by the computers into being something.
Right.
So we can't even look at that. So here the odd part on it all is, if they had just given us the initial audit, we probably would have all gone away. But instead, we dig deeper and deeper and realize these guys are digging a deep hole for themselves. And so that's not the worst part. The worst part on it occurred just 2 months ago when we had our primary election. And at that time, we found out that they actually flipped an election because they allowed a mobile app to be used for curing the signatures on the ballots. And that's where King County, one county in the state, allowed a single party, meaning the Democrat Party, to cure their ballot signatures using this mobile app.
So what does curing mean? Just for the audience, so they understand this.
So curing means that when you in our state, when you submit your ballot, you fill out your ballot, and then you sign the outside of the envelope. And when you sign the outside of the envelope, it goes into the elections office. And the elections office has the opportunity to say either that signature matches what's on file or it doesn't. If it doesn't match what's on file, then it gets held aside, until they can figure out, you know, is that a valid signature or not. So what they had here is that normal protocol in the past has been to approve that signature. You have to go out with a pen and paper and a form. The form has to be filled out by the voter that says, this is my signature, and match this up to my ballot because I want my ballot to count, which is all good. So everybody used to submit it by this paper form. Now what they did is that King County created this app in the last 2 years that says that you can take this app that's on a mobile phone, and you can finger swipe the signature on the mobile phone, and that finger swipe approves the signature that's on the ballot. Now, the odd part on that is, you tell me, when has a finger swipe signature ever look like a pen and paper signature?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it's a joke.
It is.
Right. So
so here's the part on that one. The gentleman that's on the King County Council is helped approve the creation of this app, or the budgets for this app. They spent about $500,000 on it from what we can gather. And that app was only released to the Democratic Party. So the Republican Party didn't have to. By the time they cured 2,300 ballots, the person that was in number three position then moved to the number two position by 52 votes. This is on a statewide election.
Mm-hmm.
So the part on that one, the real odd part on it is that app was not utilized by both parties in a single county, number one. Number two, that app was not utilized in all the counties. It was utilized only in one county, which was a dominant Democrat county.
A cesspool, right.
Yeah.
So King County, folks, everybody understands, King County is the Seattle area.
Yes.
Okay. So, all right. So I don't want to spend, because we could easily spend an hour or more just talking about details on the elections. Okay,
well, if anybody wants to look at the details, go to my website, themchawkins.org, and towards the very bottom of that, I have a bunch of documents that are laid in there, and one of them has to deal with this press release as it relates to this one action. Because I'm asking the people in the state to stand up and say that, number one, that was wrong. Number two, I'm asking for them to set aside that primary certification of that particular race and have that race rerun in a new general election sometime after the first of the year for just the top two candidates, which would have been Sue and Jamie Herrera Butler.
Okay, so the distilling this down, you've had nothing but headwinds and stonewalling, and you're no closer to having a success due to the fact that there is no justice in the court system, and there is no way to basically take the tight grip that the party has over our politics.
Well, we can't go into the court system, and I'll argue that because we can't find any attorneys in this state willing to take on the attorney general, who is the same individual that's running for governor on the Democratic ticket.
Right.
So Ferguson is his name, and everybody's scared of him. Nobody wants to challenge him because, you know, of what appears to be a court system that will not move for conservative values.
Okay, so you dove into the election issue. Now,
yes.
Over the course of the past, I'll say 4 years since you started that, or 3.5 years, I mean, you and I have been engaged in common and regular conversations. And I understand that you were focused on that. And so in the course of what you were doing, I was trying to provide the macro view of helping the state, or at least getting the state into the direction of creating a movement.
Yes.
And I understand that there are really hot issues, that a lot of people look at election integrity as one of the key issues.
Oh, it just a small one. It's just a small.
But there's a lot of people. I mean, just remember, a small percentage of a big number is still a big number.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, but what I've been, and what we talked about, and there wasn't any disagreement, that we need to have a broad spectrum of issues, whether it be the election, whether it be the invasion, all of these different types of issues, so that we kind of cover as an appetizer or as an appeal to the people, wow, that's my issue. Now, we don't, okay. We had medical freedom. We've had, you know, enumerated powers with the Department of Transportation, the UN. We've got a lot of different petitions, but the intent was trying to create more of a movement. And so bottom line, as I was kind of trying to help do this, you were trying to fight election integrity. So now we come to a point where we have to start deciding what to do, because over a year ago, if we had the conversation that you were going to be running for the state auditor's position, that wouldn't even have, I mean, you would have just said what? Because that conversation actually didn't come up until last spring, this past spring.
Correct.
About six, 7 months ago.
Because of the efforts that I put forward on the election stuff, I had gone the route of saying we need to take legal action. I'd gone the route of saying we need to get an attorney. I'd gone the route of saying let's file a petition.
Right.
In fact, it was the petition process that actually moved us to the point that got the WAC changed in the state by the Secretary of State. I mean, so I recognized that all of a sudden, and then it was that follow-up issue where we were trying to reconcile the election record, and nobody in our legislative body would stand up and have a conversation with us.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized at that point, okay, I've got to run for this state auditor because I've got to expose what's going on.
Right, right. So a year ago, though, a little over a year ago, we were looking at the race and so forth. And so I'm just trying to cure the process of, you know, how you went from this to where you were all in on becoming this, you know, the auditor for the state, because there was obviously another shakeup in the state of Washington politically a little over a year ago, where the WSRP chairman, the state party chair, basically resigned.
Yes.
And at about that same point in time, this is when there were some percolations in the governor race as well as the, you know, a replacement race. And so at that point in time, there was a good likelihood, and as a matter of fact, you were the only one to challenge Jim Walz, who is a legislator in the House of Legislation in the state of Washington.
Correct.
And so he was the only one, and he was the blessed one from the former chair, who I thought was one of the worst chairs. I mean, we never had a good chair in the state of Washington for a long, long time. And as a matter of fact, they're deliberately dragging the state down. They're supporting the Democrats.
We have our differences. I'll put it that way.
So anyway, so there was this point in time where you started, you know, campaigning, and actually you said, you know, I'm gonna do this, because you were getting so frustrated with what, you know, the lack of outcome regarding the election, especially after the 2022 election.
Yeah.
And so, okay, I'm just trying to create the macro view. And so you basically said, you know what, I'm going to oppose this. And you actually ran a pretty decent campaign. But the problem is that this is how corrupt the party is. If somebody says this is how we're going to vote, I mean, people don't vote because in the party, they don't vote because this is the better man. They vote because they're told to vote that way.
Well, so it kind of came down to after that election in August last year. I had people come up to me and say, Matt, we really need to do this, this, and this. And I said, listen, I'm not the chair. You guys elected so-and-so. And they said, yeah, but they don't believe in that. I said, that's fine, but we got to get behind the chair because the chair has a vision, apparently. And we, you know, we need to succeed as a party and as a state if, you know, by coalescing behind.
Right.
And I've had people since then have come up to me and said, boy, I really like what I'm seeing with you doing getting into this auditor's race.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, what happened? I said, you know, you guys voted for the other guy, so that's fine. You know, stick with them. But in the meantime, we got to get myself elected now for state right. auditor.
Okay, so back then in August, there are a couple things that happened. One of the things that happened is, you know, I was foaming at the mouth talking to you, trying to get you to out Jim Walsh for his milquetoast, actually for his failure in living up to his oath of office. And I said, you need to call him out. They just passed this digital currency. And he failed to point out that that was an unconstitutional law, that everybody should be removed. I mean, he really failed in lots of ways. It doesn't matter whether you like to be the bad guy or not. When you have a legal responsibility to support the Constitution, that's what you got to do. So anyway, so you didn't go down that path, but in there were lots of other irons in the fire. And so we were also talking about trying to create a movement with the Semi-Byrd campaign.
Well, so interesting thing is that here in Washington, you have a number of people that all profess to be constitutionalists and support the Constitution. They talk the Constitution. They preach the Constitution. It's almost like everybody picking up the Bible, thumping the Bible and say, I believe the Bible, I know the Bible, I want the Bible. Well, great, but at the end of the day, are we really following what's in the Bible? At the end of the day, on the Constitution, do we really understand the inherent, you know, the salient points that really drive value to what we're talking about?
Right.
And that's the challenge, is getting everybody to just slow down and talk about it.
So, because this is a part of, I think, you know, how we got to where we were when we had the conversation in the spring, because it was really apparent. And I've been this huge advocate of trying to create movements. As a matter of fact, you've seen, you know, my articles and so forth. So here was this opportunity to create a statewide movement of getting a state campaign to not go down the path of just worrying about getting money, but actually getting this county party central committees to form, you know, First Amendment petition committees and actually start beating, you know, the grass and start going out and getting people energized about holding the state legislature accountable and everybody in the state accountable to the Constitution by using these petitions. Mm-hmm. And we were going to present this, and that didn't happen. So that fell through because right, wrong, or indifferent, bad advice was provided, bad decisions were made. And that was outside of you and I. There was no bad advice from us or bad decisions. But we, you know, we lead the horses to water and they didn't drink. So we had this other opportunity as it was coming around. And when you were looking at all these different positions and so forth, we had, you know, this lock for Semi-Byrd was going to become the governor, you know, because he pursued the campaign and the money trail instead of creating a movement. And it seemed like he was going to be there. And what ended up happening to him?
Well, he had a movement going on which allowed him to win the convention.
But it wasn't a movement. It wasn't a movement like we're talking about. It was a support me movement instead of
correct.
Take back our government movement. Okay, go ahead.
Correct. So we introduced a new concept into the state politics for the GOP, which was we're going to have a state endorsement convention. And so the prize was get the state endorsement, get to the convention, get the state endorsement, and then you're off to the races, and everybody will fall in line behind you if you get it. Well, what nobody anticipated was that the endorsement convention was kind of a lip service.
Well, actually, let me I'll give you a different metaphor.
Okay.
Lucy pulled the ball.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, that's a polite way.
Because that's what's been happening every time.
Yes.
Lucy, you get out there onto the field, and Charlie backs up, and he starts running to kick the ball, and she pulls the ball.
Yeah, so you got to kind of wonder, okay, who's on board with what's going on here? So it kind of put everything to a little bit of a disarray after right. that endorsement convention because, mm-hmm. one, we'd never had one before. But then, two, it's kind of like, well, so what do you do with the endorsements once you get it, or what do you do if you don't get it?
Right.
And it was almost as though we didn't have the convention in the first place.
Right. And actually, you did, and actually the grassroots really supported it, but there's this small organization. When I say small, it's a small cabal of people with affluence in the party.
Well, some people call it the mainstreamers. Some right. call it the rhinos. Some call it the uniparty.
Well, so at the convention, the mainstreamers had no ability to actually silence and move the outcome of that convention in any way at all.
Correct. Grassroots, I have to admit, the grassroots were organized going into the convention, and they did everything in an orderly manner right. during the convention.
Right. But what ended up happening after that is the mainstream Republicans, these rhinos, this cabal, actually went out, they got a bunch of money, and they ran a real nasty campaign. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I told you a long time ago is you got to get LexisNexis. You've got to, you know, actually do all the financials and pull all of the dirt on the campaign, the people you're campaigning against, so you're ready to actually throw the dirt out.
Yep. So, again, as late as today, we've had more conversations on this, and it's a mixed conundrum as to who was in the background and who was creating all this mess.
Right, right.
But at the end of the day, you know as well as I do, GR, that politics is a dirty blood sport,
mm-hmm.
and it gets very challenging. But I guess I didn't anticipate that internally within our own party that we would allow the blood sport to play through as bad as we did early in the primary cycle.
Well, so one of the things that I think is the clear truth regarding the corruption of parties is that it doesn't matter how right we are with our campaigns and our positions. They have a job to do, and they will do anything and everything. The ends justify their means. And what they have to actually gut, and there's no seats taken by the Republicans, then that's a better case than allowing the wrong people to actually take a hold of the state and start steering it in the right direction. So anyway, so this is the better part. As we were heading into this convention, though, there were a couple of seats that were wide open. There was the Secretary of State seat, if I remember correctly, and there was the auditor seat. And I know you started doing the politics and feeling around.
But the treasurer seat was one. The treasurer
okay.
seat was open.
All right.
The Secretary of State was a contested one, but that's okay.
Okay. So there were a couple of seats that were wide open. And as a matter of fact, this was like a week or two before the convention. This is when we talked, and I said, Matt, you need to actually dive into that auditor's position. I mean, as much as I don't want you to do that, that's what you need to do. And then this is where it created the conversation of understanding what an auditor does. An auditor looks at and basically examines, you know, the validity of the actions by a government body or a contractor or what have you based on the contract.
And correct. Review the financial controls,
right.
They review the process and systems controls, and they also report back post-legislation
right.
who's following the legislation, who's not.
Right. Okay. So what became the epiphany is you recognize that this means that if we have a good auditor, if we actually have an auditor that understands his position and the ability to actually inject to say, hold on here, because you have the ability to say this money shouldn't be spent. this is a violation of the of this contract, of this agreement with this contract or what have you. I believe you have that same ability, especially because you brought this up, especially when First Amendment petitions start coming out, like environmental protection, like energy and these other types of things, because we have these petitions that are ready to go. And so,
let me help you on, because what you're talking about is core to what drove me into this.
Right.
As we were reading, I remember I told you we were reading through all these RCWs,
the
laws. Mm-hmm. Well, we found out that in 2020, the legislature, Democrats and Republicans alike, all passed into law the right that the governor has the right to withhold information from the public. and then in 2022, that, if that wasn't enough, by 2022, they doubled down and they gave the governor further rights as it relates to this privilege to withhold information from the public. And so that's what started creating doubt in my mind and the minds of others, that at what point are we really getting the full information?
Right.
And so with that, I recognize that the one item that the auditor has from a constitutional standpoint is that the Constitution says that government is there to serve the people, and that the auditor has a responsibility to show the transparency of government and to show that the process and procedures within government are to the benefit of the citizens.
Well, it's actually a black and white issue as well. Does the governor have this authority, or does the state legislature have the authority delegated to them in that constitution to create that law, to make that declaration, to be able to do what they just did?
So, think of it this way. This whole journey that I've been on started out with a simple premise. We like to know what really went on in that 2020 election. We just want to ask questions.
Right.
When asked questions, we want answers.
Sure.
Had we just gotten the questions answered in a very clear and concise manner, we probably would have been on and life would have been good. But in the process, we learned that there's never been an audit of the election system in 25 plus years. Well, and then all of a sudden more answers come in and more answers. And we're recognizing this government is being run roughshod over the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. It's called tyranny. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So then I go back and I realize that's the epiphany. We talk about epiphanies out. So then when the epiphany, I realize, just a second, this role of auditor, I have the right to go in and look at not just the finances, but the process and systems and all of government. I have the ability to ask the question, is the agency that we're auditing, is it constitutionally empowered? My goodness.
Right.
That's a major, you know, walk to the light kind of moment.
Right. Okay, so now all of a sudden we started, you know, working on this plan of trying to help people understand in a broader spectrum that even though everybody looks at the auditor as the outcome of contracts and the outcome of elections, it actually goes a lot deeper than that.
Yes.
And so getting people to understand that was, and I think that's been more a part of your campaign than anything else. No?
Yeah.
Okay.
No question about it. For example, revert over to something like the homelessness situation.
Sure.
$1 billion in Washington State has gone into the homeless situation to cure homelessness.
Right.
Well, what we have is a situation where it's actually compounded and growing in a very significant way. Well, then when you start asking questions on that, you're starting to recognize there's some nefarious players going on. The money seems to be getting diverted, but I can't attest to that completely because I don't have all the inside information.
Right.
I just have superficial information that is pointing to certain kind of bad behaviors.
Sure.
And I'm recognizing if that's not bad enough, then it's the education. So you keep hearing words over time that says we need to pour more money into education because, quote, it's for the benefit of our kids. And then you realize you just say, okay, just a second, we're going to do a snapshot right now. Well, at this point in time, we have more money going into education than we've ever had before.
Right.
The average salary in one of our districts is $100,000 per teacher,
uh-huh.
and yet our test scores are at an all-time low. So we're $18,000 per student in our schools average statewide, and they're saying that that's not enough, and yet our test scores are all-time low. Something is wrong here.
Yes.
So it's about process and systems. They're not being followed, nowhere close to what we have in the private sector.
Well, so actually, when we really examine the how government is exploited and how it really becomes a shell or a shill as a means of funneling money from the people through the government to those people who have been anointed to receive it. I'll give you a good case in point. When we look at the federal level, the Build Back Better, $2 trillion bill. I mean, I don't think anybody could even come up with even a fraction of $1 trillion that could account. You know, we see this work being done, and I'll bet you that $2 trillion is gone, and it's already in the pockets of those people who were supposed to receive it. Because, oh, well, these contracts were awarded, but there was no expectation of a deliverable. In other words, it wasn't like, you know, there was a clear contract of creating these bridges along these different routes throughout the nation or anything like that. It was about, well, we're going to create contracts, and then you're going to go out and give us, you know, some proposal that's already been done or whatever. I mean, however they did it, it's just a way of moving money into their hands. Like the way Obama did that with the sustainable energy. And the windmills and so forth. Go ahead.
If you think about it, you know, I know you mentioned $1 trillion.
Uh-huh.
Well, just step it back to $1 billion. We had two audits done in our state that identified that about $2 billion went missing in the audits. And no clear answers as to where the money went or how it disappeared. It's just that it disappeared.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you or anyone else in your audience, but I have a hard time comprehending $1 billion. If I have a hard time comprehending $1 billion, how can we even comprehend $1 trillion?
1,000 times that, yeah, right.
Well, yeah, I mean, because like $1 million, I can kind of understand $1 million.
Yeah.
But that means that for every $1 billion we've gone missing, that's like 1,000 homes in a neighborhood all being given $1 million.
Uh-huh.
And that's what went up in smoke.
Right.
And I'm thinking, just a second, as a society, we're losing track of a sense of reality on what any of this means anymore.
Right. Okay.
We talk about kids not having respect for their parents, but as parents, I don't think we have respect for the money that we have within our grasp.
Okay. And I'll concede. So back to your campaign.
Go ahead.
Now, let's play this what if. Let's play the what
okay.
if.
I love what ifs.
What if we had the statewide campaign kick off last August and actually working with, because how many counties, if we think about it, how many counties would have been really receptive in getting people moving and getting these petitions going?
Probably, you probably could have had as many as 27 to 30 out of the 39 counties.
There you go. So easily two thirds, if not three fourths.
Yeah.
So, where would you be today in the heat of your election had you just basically had a boogie board and you caught the wave?
Oh, it would be a long run.
No, but my point is...
I'd have fun.
Well, there you go. And it wouldn't matter. I mean, money matters because it you know, it costs money to drive and to run a campaign. But the amount of money, as long as you have enough to actually have an effective campaign, that's all that really matters. Because,
Go ahead. But GR, I don't know that money is necessarily the end all. Yes, money helps out.
Sure.
You know, on these campaigns. But think about it. If I had a group of 50 to 100 people talking about what I'm doing, and that group of 50 to 100 is talking with their friends and talk, I mean, by the time you start getting people talking about what's going on, you could have a revolution in place that does not have to be done with a Wall Street budget. Because it's about people picking up the phone and talking. It's about people reaching across their fence and talking. It's about people getting online and social media and talking. The fact that you could have this discussion going on, it could be quite profound quite quickly. That's a real grass fire.
Okay, so I think I might have mentioned this to you before, but in the 1808 presidential election, how much money did Madison spend on his election campaign to run for president?
Oh boy, I'd only be guessing on that one. I know we've talked about it, but I that detail is back in the foggy recesses.
Okay, so he was running against Charles Pinckney, who was the Federalist, and Madison was the Republican. And Madison spent $0. All's he did, because he was the Secretary of State, all's he did was he wrote letters to the existing electors who helped Jefferson get elected, because they were selected as the electors to choose the president. And so he just wrote them letters. So whatever the postage was, and back in those days, they probably didn't have to pay for postage because it was just a service. And so he just wrote these letters and said, this, you know, I'm basically on the same heading and we're going to be doing the same things, you know, haze gray and underway, which is a naval term. But, you know, then he sent these out. That was the extent of his campaign. And he overwhelmingly won.
So he did, at that point in time, what we could do in social media today.
Well, kind of, but actually it's a lot different, because in social media, we have to reach the people to vote for you, you know, the president or the candidate. But back in those days, you actually had a person in each of these congressional districts that was running as the elector to say, if you elect me, I will vote for Madison. So in other words, you actually had boots in every congressional district. You had boots on the ground running this campaign for you.
Okay.
And so for the most part, that means that it's just like what we were talking about with this ground game with the petitions. Had Semmy Byrd got these central committees and created these committees within the committee, in other words, the subcommittee that was doing First Amendment petitions, and they were out there basically not haranguing, but educating the people on all of this government overreach. And the only way we're going to save the state, this nation, is to start holding our people accountable, our governments. In other words, the campaign would have been elect me and you can hold me accountable.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why you actually signed that pledge, because these pledges that we have is where somebody is going to be held accountable.
Yes.
So the point is when you look at the elector and the electoral college, back in those days, you had a ground game and they did the work for you. They were the ones that, because they were working to get elected. In other words, they actually carried some of the cost of the campaign. Does that make sense?
No, it makes all the sense in the world.
Right.
In fact, I honestly believe that the concepts you're talking about are constitutional, and I think are elements of truth. They're nuggets of truth.
Uh-huh.
And I think that if more people could just begin to adapt to these nuggets of truth, that I think that we could fast track change in this country in a very profound and significant way.
Yeah. So the outcome of the Madison election was Madison ended up carrying well over 120 electoral votes, and I don't think Pinckney came close to 50. So I mean, it was pretty, you know. It was almost, he just kind of got on this little raft and pushed off and just kind of went down the slow Mississippi to enjoy the day.
Well, that would have been a real sweep at that time. It'd be a real sweep today to be able to get that kind of a win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, again, if things would have happened that way. So I'm hoping, and I know that, you know, I'm hoping you actually win, but I'm hoping even more than that, I'm hoping that this can be the catalyst. If you win and we can actually start driving these committees and actually getting the counties moving, because bottom line, what that means is that we can actually change and turn around the failure of conservatives, or I should say Republicans and conservatives in the state to vote, because what's the percentage of those people not voting? We just have about 2-3 minutes left, but I mean, it's what, 20-30% that don't show?
We have about 20% don't show.
Right.
It maybe gets knocked down to 15% during a presidential year, but yeah, we're at risk for that 20%.
Yeah, and what is the Democratic percentage? It's a like 120, right? So, I mean, it's always, every election, whether it's presidential or not, they always have gangbuster numbers.
They do.
Because there's never a ballot that won't be filled out.
Correct. And when technology comes into bear, and when there's no audits of any part of the system, you got to, it casts doubt in your mind.
Right.
Yeah. As we've been told before, we need to trust but verify.
Well, let's do this. What's your website again?
mchawkins.org.
Okay, mchawkins.org. And you're running for the state auditor in the state of Washington. Just Correct. Imagine, folks, having somebody actually at the state level being able to poke the governor, the attorney general, the secretary of state, and even the state legislature in the eye, saying you're passing a bill that you're going to have to write a check for. In other words, you're going to have to spend money to enforce that bill or to do what you just did, and you don't have the authority, like shutting down, you know, gas use in homes, or shutting down the dam system, you know, from producing electricity. I mean, there's so many things that they're doing that they have no authority, and they're basically bankrupting the state.
So I think it can go a step further, and that is, you're talking about everything that's internal to the state.
Uh-huh.
I think that I can also, at the same time, when I ask the question, is the agency we're auditing, is it constitutional, I can introduce the concept that says, how about the federal government? Does the federal government have a right to be doing what they're doing with this agency that's in our state?
Right.
This is the last nugget to share with your audience, is I love the idea when people come to me and say, how can I know that I'll get my questions answered if you get elected? Because it sounds like you have a plan. And I just said, what I do know is that this First Amendment petition process, I can help set up the system in play in our state that allows any citizen in any county the right to step forward to petition their government. That concept alone, I don't know how we got away from it in the last 200 years, but under my watch, we will get that reintroduced.
That'll be another show altogether. But. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate what you're doing, and Godspeed and good luck. And folks, again, it's mchawkins.org. And obviously he can use any bit of help that you can throw his way between now and the general election. And thank you again, and Godspeed.
Let's light it up.
Thank you. Bet. Bye. All right, so from that point, moving forward, what we've hoped to do is give you results that Matt Hawkins won that election. More importantly, getting people engaged and getting people to directly support the effort. Now, you can support candidates financially. You can actually support this effort by donating your time. What we really need, we need more people donating their time and efforts. But unfortunately, there's too many people that just because they are working and so much, or I should say, there's so much time taken from them to do work and just to stay ahead. If we're not contributing to the solution, then we're indirectly contributing to the problem. In other words, you're either a part of the solution or you're a part of the problem. It really comes down to the simplicity of that. And with that, as we kind of wrap everything up, we'll be back on Monday with a little bit of feedback, and hopefully we'll have a Chip, or be able to announce at least the Chip Murray music interview, so we can talk to the artist and the activist, Chip Murray. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.